Maseches Peah, Perek Dalet, Mishnah Vav, until Perek Dalet, Mishnah Tes. The Torah says that the obligation of Peah is of a kutzer chem. When you harvest the field, then you're obligated to leave a corner. And we learn from the fact that the Torah says when you harvest the field, that if a non-Jew harvests the field for his own needs, then the owner of the field is exempt from separating Peah. And this is something we learned already earlier on in the Masechta. But our Mishnah now is going to focus on somebody who at the beginning of the harvesting process was a non-Jew, but then he converted to become a Jew during the harvesting process. Nachri shekotzer sadehu, a non-Jew who harvested his field, so he has detached the crop from the ground, but before gathering all the crop into big bundles and big haystacks, v'achakach niskayer, then he converts. And now, only once he is a Jew does he go and gather in all the produce and pile it up into haystacks. So the law over here is going to be dependent upon when the obligation to separate payah and other gifts for the poor, when does that obligation set in? And the answer is the obligation sets in at the time of the actual harvesting, where you're actually cutting down the crop. And since he was not Jewish at that time, potter min ha-leket, he's exempt from leaving leket for the poor people. Leket is the stalks which fall out of the harvesting instrument whilst the farmer is harvesting. Usually that goes to the poor. But over here, since he was not Jewish when he harvested the field, even if he later converts, he's already passed the obligation. When the obligation set in, it didn't apply to him, and therefore it's not going to apply to him later, so he is still exempt from leaving the leket for the poor people. As well as this, umin ha-shikcha, he's also exempt from leaving shikcha for the poor people. Shikcha refers to the forgotten produce. And there are two types of shikcha. One are the stalks which the farmer forgets to cut off the ground, and the other type are the forgotten bundles, which he leaves in the field and forgets to bring them in. Now, certainly when it comes to the first type, the forgotten stalks, the obligation of that type of shikcha certainly sets in at the time of the harvesting, because that shikcha is forgetting to harvest that. And in the case of the Mishnah, he was not Jewish when he forgot those stalks. However, when it comes to the other type of shikcha, when he forgot to bring in certain bundles from the field, at the stage where he was bringing in the bundles, he was Jewish. And therefore you would think that for that type of shikcha at least, this convert should be obligated to leave that for the poor people. Because when the obligation set in for that type of shikcha, he was indeed Jewish. However, the Mishnah says that he is exempt even from that type of shikcha, according to this first opinion of the Mishnah. And the reason for that is that since the two types of shikcha are derived from the same source in the Torah, if he is exempt from one, then he is also exempt from the other one, and therefore even the shikcha of the bundles, this convert will not need to give to the poor. Alright, and thirdly, umin ha-peah, he is certainly exempt from giving peah to the poor, because peah, as we have seen a number of times, the obligation of peah is at the end of the harvesting itself, the cutting of the produce, and at that stage he was not Jewish. Now Rabbi Yehuda mechayev b'shikcha. Rabbi Yehuda says that this convert is actually obligated to leave shikcha for the poor, and he's referring specifically to the type of shikcha, which is the bundles. He agrees that stalks which you left in the ground, you don't need to give those to the poor, because he wasn't Jewish when he was cutting down the produce. But the shikcha of the bundles, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we view that as separate from the other type of shikcha, she'en ha-shikcha el b'sha'as ha'imur, because this shikcha, the obligation of the shikcha only sets in at the time of the bundling up, at the time where you bring in all the bundles and put them into big stacks, and at that stage he was Jewish, and therefore he is obligated to leave this shikcha for the poor people. Mishnah Zayin, the way we're going to understand this Mishnah is that it only goes according to the Chachomim in the previous Mishnah, who hold that if the farmer was not obligated to separate shikcha of the forgotten stalks, meaning that at the time of the harvesting, of detaching the crop from the ground, he was exempt, then he is also exempt from the shikcha of the bundles, even if he is Jewish at the time where they bring in all the bundles to the stacks. We are following the Chachomim's opinion that he is exempt even from that type of shikcha. As we mentioned in the previous Mishnah, the Torah says, "V'kutzrachem," and when you harvest the field. And just like that excludes non-Jews, because the Torah is saying specifically you, not non-Jews, it also excludes hekdesh. Hekdesh is property which is designated to the Beis HaMikdash. So if at the time of the harvesting, the field belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, and the treasurer or the person who managed the hekdesh property, if he harvested the field, then the field will be exempt from peah and the other gifts which the farmer needs to leave for the poor. So the Mishnah tells us, hekdesh, if the farmer made standing grain hekdesh, meaning before he harvested the field, before he even cut down the crop, he made the field hekdesh, ufoda, but then he redeemed the field while it was still standing and attached to the ground. So that means that he paid the value of the field to the Beis HaMikdash and transferred the holiness and the designation from the field onto the money. So now the money belongs to the Beis HaMikdash and the field belongs to him once more. So if he then goes and harvests the field, chayav, he is obligated because the obligation sets in at the time of the harvesting when he cuts it down. And at that point he owned it and therefore he is obligated to leave leket shikcha and peah. Amorin, what happens if the farmer only made the crop hekdesh when it was already in bundles? So it's been detached from the ground, he did that, and then he made it hekdesh before bringing it in from the field. And then again, before anyone did anything to the produce, before they brought in all the bundles, ufoda amorin, he redeemed the field while it was still as bundles, which had not yet been brought in from the field. So then he continued the process. So again, of course, Chayev, he is obligated to leave the leket and peah because he harvested the field even before making it hekdesh. And he's also obligated to separate shikcha, which comes after he redeems it. Because again, at the time that the obligation sets in, either at the time that he detaches the produce or the time that he brings in the bundles. But either way, in this case, he was the one doing it and he owned the field and therefore he's obligated. However, comma, if he made it hekdesh while it was standing and attached to the ground, and then whilst it belonged to the Beis HaMikdash, it was harvested by the person managing the Beis HaMikdash's property. So in this case, at the time that the obligation set in, he was exempt. And this even applies to shikra, because we're going according to the Chachomim in the previous Mishnah, that the obligation of shikra, even shikra of the bundles, sets in, or we view it as if it sets in, already when he is detaching the produce from the ground. So Poda Amorin, if he only redeemed it once it was already into bundles, then Petura he's exempt, Shebishas Chayvasa Haisa Petura. Because at the time of the obligation, when the obligation set in, he was exempt, and therefore even if later on he now owns the field, he will not be obligated to give these gifts to the poor. Mishnah Ches, the Mishnah is now going to compare the laws stated in the previous Mishnah with similar laws concerning Maaseros. Maaseros are the various tithes and gifts which a farmer needs to separate other than leket, shikra, and peah. For example, a tenth of his produce he needs to give to the Levi. That's called Maaser Rishon. It includes truma, which he needs to give to the Kohen. And there are a couple of other gifts as well. No one becomes obligated to separate the maaseros from his produce only once it reaches the stage of growth where it becomes edible. And that stage is known as Einas HaMaaseros, the time of the maaseros, meaning the stage at which a fruit or other produce becomes obligated in Maaseros. Now the truth is, even once it's reached Einas HaMaaseros, and Einas HaMaaseros, by the way, is different for each produce. It just depends on when it becomes edible. But even once it has become edible, as long as one doesn't eat a fixed meal of that produce, he can eat the produce as like snacks, in a temporary fashion, and he will not need to take Maaseros from it. However, once they're processing, and all the harvesting, all the gathering in, once that is all completed, then one can't even eat from the produce in a temporary manner. Until, of course, he takes the requisite gifts, and from that point onwards, he can, of course, enjoy the food as he pleases. So the Mishnah tells us, Kayetzebai, similar to that which we said in the previous Mishnah, Hamakdish Peresov, one who makes his produce hekdesh, he designates it to the Beis HaMikdash, Ad Shelo Bol Onas HaMaaseros, before they've reached the stage of Onas HaMaaseros. So they're not yet edible, they're not yet obligated in Maaseros. And then, Ufudon, he redeemed them onto money, and took back the produce, and they still haven't reached Onas HaMaaseros. In that case, Chayovin, of course, his produce are still obligated in Maaseros, because when the obligation will set in, he will be the owner of the produce. Similarly, if he only designates them as Tekdesh, Mishabol Onas HaMaaseros, once they've reached the stage of Onas HaMaaseros, and we're going to understand this to mean that the entire harvesting process has been completed, so it reached the stage where they were forbidden to eat the food without taking the gifts, without separating them and giving them to the people they need to give them to. So if he only made them hekdesh, once it reached that stage, so when the obligation set in, he was the owner. Ufadon, then he redeemed them. After that, chayovin, he's still of course obligated to separate the gifts and give them to the people, as we explained. The only case where he won't need to is hekdishon ad shelo nigmaru, if he made them hekdesh before their processing was completed. So this could mean before the onas HaMaaseros, before they're even edible, or it could mean after they're edible, just before their entire processing has been completed. Ugamorin ha-gizbar, and then their harvesting process was completed by the gizbar, by the person managing hekdesh's property. V'achakach padon, and only then did he redeem them. In that case, paturin, the owner and the farmer would be exempt from separating maaseros. Again, the reason being, shebishas chayvasan hayptorin, at the time where the obligation set in, they were exempt. So to summarize, if at either the stage of onas HaMaaseros, or at the stage where the entire harvesting process has been completed, if at either of those two stages the field was owned by the Beis HaMikdash, only in that scenario would the farmer be exempt from separating the Trumos and Maaseros, but in all other cases he would be obligated. Mishnah Tes, because to acquire something is considered a benefit, one is able to acquire something on behalf of somebody else, even if that other person doesn't know about it. In general, for me to do something on behalf of somebody else, he has to appoint me as a messenger, but if what I am doing is beneficial for him, then that works even if you're not appointed by him. Because of this, if a poor person comes to a field and he sees some payor there, he is able to perform an act of acquisition in order to acquire the payor, and if he has the intention that he is acquiring it for the sake of another poor person, then he can do so, and that payor is now owned by that other poor person. Now the truth is, it's not so simple, because every poor man in the world is entitled to that payor. It's just that whoever gets it first, he gets to keep it. So how can somebody acquire it on behalf of somebody else if that somebody else is not here right now? He has no more right to take it than any other poor person. So how can you acquire it on behalf of him if he's not even here? So he has no more right than anybody else. The answer is that since this person himself is poor, he could technically take it for himself. And then if he wants, he can give it over to the other poor person. So since he is able to take it for himself, the halacha is that he is also able to take it and acquire it on behalf of somebody else, even if that means that other poor people won't be able to take it. The Gemara calls this migud zochi lenafshei, zochi nami lechavrei. Since he can acquire it for himself, he can also acquire it on behalf of somebody else. Our mission's discussion is what happens if the person doing this, the person performing the act of acquisition on behalf of the other poor person, is a wealthy person. Because in that case, you can't necessarily say, since he can acquire it for himself, he can acquire it also for somebody else. Because over here, he can't acquire it for himself, because he is wealthy, and payor only goes to poor people. So at first glance, you would think that if the person performing the acquisition of the payor is wealthy, then he cannot do this act of acquisition on behalf of somebody else, and all the more so he can't do it for himself, because he isn't entitled to the payor. But we're going to see that it's actually a machlekes. Mishalokat is a payor. Somebody who gathered the payor, he detached it from the ground, and that's how you acquire the payor. The Omani said, behold, this should be for so-and-so, the poor person. I am acquiring it on his behalf. Rabbi Eliezer says, Zochaloi. He has acquired it for him, and it does work. And the reason for Rabbi Eliezer is because even the wealthy person potentially could make himself entitled to the payor. How? Well, if you think about it, if he declares all his property ownerless, Hefka, he has now made himself a poor man, at least in a legal sense. So as a poor man, he'd be able to take the payor. So Rabbi Eliezer says that since, potentially, he could be entitled to this payor, we apply the rule of Migge de Zoche Lenafshei, Zoche Nami Lechavrei, that since he could acquire it for himself, technically, he can also do so for somebody else. However, the Chachomim say, no. This rule of Migge de Zoche Lenafshei, Zoche Nami Lechavrei, that's enough. But you can't extend that rule to say that since you can potentially do it for yourself, so you can do it for somebody else, that's taking it too far. And therefore, if the wealthy person did this, he has not acquired it on behalf of a particular oni, a particular poor person. And at the same time, he can't keep it for himself. So what should he do? He should just give the payor to the first oni who he finds, and that oni will take it and acquire it, just like any normal payor, which has not been acquired by a particular oni. Alright, when it comes to a non-Jew who owns land in Eretz Yisrael, there's a debate as to whether a non-Jew can actually legally own land in Eretz Yisrael. And the way we're going to understand our Mishnah is that this Mishnah follows the opinion that Ein kin lenochri be'eretz Yisrael, lafkiyam de'maisa, that a non-Jew cannot legally own any land in Eretz Yisrael, and this has a consequence in terms of taking maaser. The gifts which a farmer separates and gives to the poor people, for example, leket, payor, shikra, when the poor person takes that, he does not need to separate trumas and maaseros from there. That in itself is a gift. Now, if a non-Jew were to own land, so then all the crop which grows in his land will not require Trumos and Maaseros to be taken from there. A non-Jew is not obligated to take Trumos and Maaseros. However, if you follow the opinion that a non-Jew cannot technically own land in Eretz Yisrael, that means that if a Jew takes produce from that land, it's technically owned by a Jew, whoever the previous Jewish owner was. Or right now it's owned by the Jew who takes the produce. The point is, it's not owned by the non-Jew, which means it's obligated in Trumos and Maaseros. And a question which arises is what happens if the non-Jew, for some reason, decided he wanted to give leket and shikra and payor? He's not obligated to, but let's say ha-leket va-shikra va-payor shal nochri. These gifts for the poor which come from a non-Jew. Says the Mishnah, Chayiv b'Maaseres, these gifts are obligated in Maaseres, and the poor people will have to separate the Trumas and Maaseres from there. The reason being, that since it was given by a non-Jew, it's not classified as leket or shikha or peah. We view it as just gifts, and therefore the poor people will need to separate the Trumas and Maaseres from them. Elohim ken hifger, unless the non-Jew makes his part of his produce ownerless. Because ownerless property, ownerless produce, is exempt from Trumas and Maaseres. So then if a poor person or even a wealthy person comes and takes that ownerless produce, he will certainly be exempt from separating the gifts, the Trumas and the Maaseres. The point of the mission just is that a non-Jew who gives these gifts, the gifts do not have the status of Leket, Shecha, and Peah, and therefore are obligated in Trumas and Maaseres. Just like all of the produce in a non-Jewish person's field in Eretz Israel, since the non-Jew does not technically own it, and therefore it is obligated in Trumas and Maaseres.